Oh, it's nice to be here. I don't normally speak at services that don't involve eating some food beforehand, or that don't start with breakfast at something. I'd like to read to you from Luke chapter 10 as well, which you can find on page 1042 of your Bible. Luke 10, verse 25. It's a story you'll probably all know quite well. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbour?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Oh, what a fantastic set of readings that we have today. I can't tell you how pleased I was to be given these passages from Luke, plus the theme of loving Jesus, loving extravagantly. Those of you who hear me speak regularly at breakfast at 9 will know that my favourite subject for speaking will always be Jesus, because there's no better person on whom to base the way that we live our lives. He not only encourages us to love others extravagantly, but he set the perfect example of how to go about doing it. So who do you follow through life? What person do you listen to most closely? Observe in action and seek to emulate. Ask the opinions of as a first choice. I'm quite a fan of observing others. Not in a distasteful, judgmental, gossipy, OK magazine sort of way. I'm just fascinated by the way that people dress and act, the way that they behave publicly, privately, change personality according to who they're in the company of, and how they deal with life's ups and downs. People are very interesting. Humanity is very interesting. Utterly beautiful, compassionate, loving, and full of honesty and grace at times. Utterly cruel, hateful, selfish, ambitious, and horrifying at other times. We're all capable of such wonderful things. We all have a capacity for great acts of love, often built from a number of small acts of love, if we so choose. Yet we also all have the capacity for acts which cause hurt, pain, and cruelty. It's entirely up to us who we choose to follow and emulate. You may say, "But I don't follow anyone. I decide what I do through life. No one pulls my strings." But of course, we're all affected by the world around us, the people around us. Simply can't help being influenced by them. Friends, family, wives. Wives again. Husbands, children, bosses, colleagues, social groups, church ministers, politicians. They all influence varying sized parts of our lives. Politicians are currently working every method that they know how to influence us in the way that we vote in the EU referendum. Are you in or are you out? Are you going to wait until you've stood in front of that piece of paper and close your eyes and have a stab at one of them? I'm a fan of watching the programme 24 Hours in A&E. Many of you will have seen it. For me, it shows people when they're often facing the darkest and most frightening moments of their lives. And we have the privilege of watching how they deal with this. We have the privilege of watching and witnessing great acts of love, selfless care, and reliance on something outside of individual control. I find it very moving. Not the only one. We're never going to escape the influence that others have on our lives. But that's not such a bad thing, as long as we seek to take on board only those things that are going to build us up and at times offer us accountability, make us ultimately more like the character that we see in Jesus, which I would suggest is the best person to give your life over to and to seek to emulate in every aspect of living. So what does that mean? I hope to touch on a couple of examples from today's readings. There's a lot in those passages, so forgive me for not touching on every single bit of it. As I said at my son Micah's recent dedication service, following Jesus, for me, isn't about signing up to endless, outdated or oppressive religious doctrines and theories. Indeed, for anyone who's tempted to get religion confused with faith, it's perhaps helpful to remember that it was organized religion, the rigid teachings of Jesus, the rigid teachings, opinions, doctrines, and creeds of the priests of the day that got Jesus killed. Making Jesus the person that you live your life emulating doesn't mean adopting an anti-intellectual and overly literalistic view of the Bible's text, and insisting that the world was made in 6 days just over 6,000 years ago. It doesn't mean believing that the world is going to end soon, or even wishing that it would. It doesn't mean preferring life to death, faith to reason, or censorship to debate. It doesn't mean becoming dogmatic or savagely judgmental, or thinking that everyone who disagrees with you or has a different perspective on a biblical text is going to burn in the abyss forever. Nor does it mean opposing human rights, women's rights, gay rights, individual moral autonomy, freedom, remarriage, stem cell research, the use of condoms, innovation, other faiths, atheists, sex, fashion, the teaching of evolutionary biology, the Big Bang, or particle physics. Some of you will have heard me say that before. Some of you may not. Though I should say, a careful and evolving thought process shared in community and immersed in prayer and biblical study should always be a major part in any opinion forming. What following Jesus does mean is giving your life to a person who is both fully man and fully God. A God who is at the very heart of the universe, a God of love, who's on the side of all those who are oppressed and forgotten, who feel insignificant and powerless, and who calls us to join in with a revolutionary movement to bring hope, love, and real liberation to all. This is the Jesus who brought strength and inspiration to my life and who breathes colour into everything that I do within life, with him placed right at the centre, providing focus for the way that I choose to live. If you don't already, and I know that so many of you do, I would suggest that there is no better person to follow through life and give the lion's share of influence over to. We may miss the mark, but better to miss trying than not to try at all. So, passages that we had today from Luke offer us a fantastic set of methods for living, which were some of Jesus' most challenging teachings for his followers to grasp. Even in our society today, many will have heard of the story of the Good Samaritan. They'll also likely have heard of Jesus' teaching that we should turn the other cheek and love even our enemies as ourselves. And all too often, this teaching, turning the other cheek, would be used as an example, but with little understanding of what Jesus actually meant by it within the culture of the society of his day. Firstly, this was not a teaching to be passive. Whatever he was, Jesus was never passive. Even the briefest reading of the Gospels will confirm this. And in line with everything else he stood for, his teaching about loving enemies was not a command for his followers to act like apathetic doormats. Rather, Jesus wanted to inspire active, creative, and strong responses to aggression and persecution without resorting to violence. He clearly viewed violence as not only in opposition to God's character, but ultimately impractical and impotent for solving dispute. Within Matthew, Jesus chose to address the issue of dealing with injustice with three vivid illustrations, which most of you will know. Turning the other cheek: if someone wants to sue you for your shirt, then give them your coat as well. And if a soldier forces you to carry his pack 1 mile, then carry it two. And there was cultural backing for each of those that made a lot of sense to the people in that day. But for today, due to time, let's look at turning the other cheek. "When someone slaps you on the right cheek," he began, "turn and let that person slap you on the other cheek." Now, this piece of advice, if we're honest, seems absolutely ridiculous. Why should we let someone openly abuse us in this way without fighting back? However, Jesus' words would have sounded very different to the oppressed, downtrodden audience who he first addressed. Whether they were for him or against him, none would have failed to appreciate just how radical, active, and downright confrontational this teaching was. Jesus' cultural setting, the initial blow suffered by the victim would have been backhanded, designed not so much to injure as to offer insult, to humiliate and degrade. This kind of slap was only given to perceived inferiors. So a master would backhand his slaves, husbands their wives, and Romans Jews. But by teaching his audience to turn the other cheek, Jesus wasn't suggesting that they take the insult lying down. In fact, the opposite is true. By following Jesus' advice, a servant, slave, wife, or Jew would make it impossible for his or her master to hit them again with the back of the hand. The left cheek may now have offered the perfect target for the second blow, but because of the strong cultural taboos of the day, a person hitting was unable to use the left hand, which was reserved for unclean tasks. In practice, this meant that the aggressors only had one option if they wanted to continue to hit. Because they could only use their right hands, they would have to slap or punch their victims, but only equals fought this way. And the whole purpose of the initial backhanded slap was to make it abundantly clear that they were not equals. Thus, turning the other cheek wasn't passive, it was proactive. The inferior was saying, "I am a human being, just like you. I will not be humiliated any longer. I am your equal. And if you want to hit me again, you'll have to acknowledge that." So Jesus isn't teaching just take it, but exactly the reverse. Stand up for yourself. Take control, but don't answer your oppressor on their terms. It's brilliant. However, of course, such defiance was obviously no way to avoid trouble. Meek acceptance of one's place was what was required in that situation. That's what the oppressor was looking for. And behaviour, impertinent behaviour like this, would probably have brought about a fairly severe flogging. But still, the point would have very much been made. Second story we hear this morning was that of the Good Samaritan. Jesus knew that he was speaking not only to the everyday man or woman, Gentile and Jews alike, but he also had an audience with the religious leaders of the day. And these religious leaders had turned God into nothing more than their own tribal, racist, oppressive and sexist deity. They represented God's chosen people, the Jews, good news for them and those who thought like them, but not good news for everybody else. Of course, what they failed to recognise was that when it turns out that God hates all the same people that you do, you can safely conclude that what you've done is simply recreate him in your own image. Jesus upset the Jewish authorities because he presented a vision of God far bigger than the one that they were willing to offer. The God he spoke of was more generous than theirs, more inclusive than theirs, more reckless than theirs, extending mercy and grace to all people, regardless, rather than just those deemed good enough, religious enough, or orthodox enough to be acceptable. Jesus not only reminded the hierarchy that their own scriptures taught, "You shall love your neighbour as yourself," but he went on to radically reinterpret and extend this principle further as he introduced the revolutionary idea that this approach to relationships should even include their enemies as well. "Love your enemies," he declared. "Pray for those who persecute you. In that way, you will be children of your Father in heaven." Strong, hard-hitting, far-reaching words. Which brings us to the famous story told by Jesus in response to the question, "Who is my neighbour?" posed to him one day by one of the nation's religious experts. Jesus replied with the story that we all know as that of the Good Samaritan. Now, Jews hated Samaritans. They really hated Samaritans. All Samaritans. Any reading of their scriptures made clear to them that the people of Samaria were to be outcast. In the Israel of the day, the name Samaritan was a term of contempt and abuse. Both Jewish and Samaritan religious leaders taught that it was off limits to have contact with the opposite group, something which from time to time became outright hostility and had done for generations. Ever since Samaria had become separate from the kingdom of Israel, ruled by King David and his son Solomon, and the 10 northern tribes proclaimed self-rule, severing their ties from what they perceived to be the rich south and their corrupt royal family. All this had taken place a millennium before. The Samaritans were the only group which had survived that history and now believed themselves to be the guardians of the authentic faith of Abraham, of the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Moses. In direct opposition to the Jews. Both parties, the Jews and the Samaritans, viewed the other as heretics of a corrupt faith who'd been rejected by God. Not the best basis for afternoon tea parties and celebrations. It was in this context that Jesus introduced the Jewish audience to his story of an abandoned, beaten, and vulnerable Jew, ignored by two proud members of the Jewish establishment, but eventually helped by a despised Samaritan traveller. It would have made for uncomfortable listening. Perhaps today, Jesus might have told a similar story in terms of Protestants and Catholics, Hutus and Tutsis, Sunnis and Shias, Americans and Communists, or Jews and Palestinians. A person who acted with generosity, grace and mercy towards someone on the other side of the fence was the one who was the true neighbour and acted according to the true nature of God. The Quakers have a lovely saying, "An enemy is a friend whose story we have not heard." Just because someone is difficult to love, or we perceive them as such, doesn't mean we shouldn't be trying to make the effort. Jesus never says that this stuff is easy. He demonstrated how difficult it was. We're always imprisoned by our exclusion of those who are different from us, never released by it. It's only as we build bridges with those who don't see life the way that we do, that we begin to confront and deal with the hidden ugly parts within ourselves, allowing God to make us into the people with characters more like his. In a world where we can be friends with whoever we like, I'd suggest that more often than not, we choose only to befriend those who are strikingly similar to us in opinion, outlook, ethnicity, and income. Jesus challenges all this in order for us to engage with what he is offering to us as life in all its fullness. It's a trust thing, to trust that Jesus knew what that meant in a way that we don't. So when we're pushed to make these steps to do things that are sometimes hideously uncomfortable and desperately difficult, they're worthwhile in God's eyes, and God's working ahead of us in those situations. Jesus not only said all these things, but he demonstrated them too. Jesus' first listeners struggled with the universality of his message. The tragedy is that over the centuries, little has changed. The words still present a giant challenge to the neat and comforting formulas for life that we cling to, which are, as ever, designed to distinguish from the clean and unclean, the acceptable from the unacceptable, and the suitable from the unsuitable. Jesus spoke about losing our lives in order to gain life through him. He invites all of us to enter his upside-down way of living, embrace the kingdom of God rather than man, and begin living his way. Those of us who are determined to walk the way of Jesus may well get laughed at by others for taking it all a bit far, being idealistic or naive. But by doing so, basing our lives on the example for living set by Jesus, is living extravagantly with love, we are on the way to becoming the kinds of people that God has always intended us to be. Put simply, if the way that we're living doesn't look like Jesus, then it isn't God. And this remains the challenge of Jesus' life and message. You win looking like you're losing.